The Korach story, the story of rebellion, is a story that comes up in so many different chapters in history. And, you know, it follows a pretty similar theme. You know, pretty much all mutinies over time follow a basic structure. There's someone who's disgruntled, let's say, even in a company or something. There's a disgruntled employee who feels that he's smarter and more capable than the CEO. And therefore, the company's hiring decisions, he thinks, are all and administrative positions are being filled with nepotism. And he thinks that's a terrible thing. And he begins the rebellion, and you know the rest goes as it goes. And these kinds of stories happen thousands and thousands of times. So the bare bones of the Korach story are very familiar to us. You know, this is the kind of thing that happens all the time, where someone feels like he knows better, he feels like he could do a better job than the boss, and the boss is just hiring his brother and his cousin and his nephew and it's not fair, and he's therefore going to rally up the people, the Hamonam, against this all-powerful boss, and that's what happens. But the details of the story are puzzling and sometimes strange. For example, Moshe insists, how is he going to prove that Korach and his cohorts are mistaken? What's the way to prove that he's right? What's the way to prove it? We should bring ketores. Everyone should bring ketores, and God will accept the ketores of Aaron, will reject the ketores of the rebels, and he will thereby prove, when this miracle happens, a fire from God comes and takes Aaron's ketores, but not their ketores, that will thereby prove that Moshe Rabbeinu is correct. And if that's not enough, Moshe says, "Bezos teidun ki Hashem shlachani la'asos es kol ha'maisim ha'ele ki lo milibi." With this you'll know that I didn't make this stuff up, this is all from Hashem. "Im kamos kol ha'adam yumusun eila." Another sign. If these people die of natural causes, if their end is a normal person's end, then Hashem didn't send me. But if God, and it's like Moshe's like making this up, if God creates some new creation, and the earth opens up its mouth, where's the earth's mouth? I don't know. The earth opens up its mouth, uvala osam, and swallows them, and everything that they have, v'yerdu chayim sha'ola, and they're swallowed alive into the depths, v'yadatim kinatu anashim eiles Hashem, then you'll know that these people are rebels against God and they deserve what they got. Why ketores as the carbon that's going to signify? Couldn't any other offering have made the same point? And furthermore, why the earth swallowing them up? You know, let's say there were 250 rebels, right? Let's say there were 250 simultaneous heart attacks or brain aneurysms. Wouldn't that do it? Like, instead of saying if they died, the sun actually left the earth swallowing them up, what if Moshe would have said, if all 250 of them have a brain aneurysm simultaneously and we don't, then that will be a sign. Why is it after the earth swallowing them up? Would people have viewed 250 simultaneous heart attacks as just a strange coincidence and not the hand of God? Furthermore, the strange events weren't just limited to what was going on down here on earth. In Shemayim, the Gemara Nedarim Daf Lamed Tes sort of gives us a peek, and it tells us that there were some unusual conversations going up in Shemayim. Milamit Sha'alu Shemesh V'Yarech Mirakil the Zvul. The Shemesh and the Yarech, the sun and the moon, went from the Rakia, which is one of the heavens. There are seven heavens. That's why we talk about someone in seventh heaven. We're talking about someone who's very happy, because there are seven heavens. It's the highest heaven. Rakia is not the highest heaven, it happens to be. When we say the Tchelis, Rav Shachter mentioned yesterday, Tchelis is Dom Eliyam, which is Dom Rakia. Rakia is not the highest heaven, because there's a little bit of sadness in the seventh heaven. There's some crying, Lefnai V'Lefnim, up in Shemayim, in the seventh heaven. But a little below that, you know, it's the happiest point. So that's the Rakia. The Shemesh and the Yerech go from the Rakia, Lizvul, to the, you know, sort of like innermost chamber of God. Va'amru lefanav, ribono shalolam, imata osa din leben Amram, anu mi'irim, v'imlav en anu mi'irim. They threatened God. They gave him an ultimatum. God, we work for you so long as you have Moshe's back. If you don't have Moshe's back, if you don't protect him over here, if you don't carry out the din that he's interested in, we quit. We will not provide light anymore. Now, the Jews committed a chet ha'egel. They committed a chet ha'meraglim. They complained about meat. They did all sorts of things. And this is where the sun and the moon choose to take a stand. We can't tolerate this. What is it about Korach that so resonated with the sun and the moon? One of my rebbeim, Rav Baruch Simon, from Yeshiva University, in the Sefer Imre Baruch, develops an idea that I think addresses these issues. And he points out that the underlying cause of Korach's rebellion was a sense of jealousy, inadequacy, and overall being underappreciated, because he saw people with the glamour positions, and he wanted some of that glamour, he wanted some of that prestige, he wanted some of that honor. The problem with his motivation was a fundamental lack of understanding of the mechanics of a successful nation, or for that matter, a successful company, a successful family, a successful shul, a successful yeshiva, any unit of people, in order to be successful, requires that there be leaders and there be followers, that there be role players and there be stars. And that's the way it sort of has to work. You know, he wanted to climb the mountain so that everybody could see him on top of the mountain. And he failed to realize that a Jewish leader climbs the mountain so that he could see everybody else from the clearest perspective and make sure that everybody's in a position to thrive where their talents are. So he viewed this as, oh, Moshe has all the glamour. He has all the glory. Moshe has all the responsibility. And everybody has to do something to fit in and to allow Klal Yisrael to function properly. You know, there was a while ago, you probably find it on YouTube, there was a graduation speech. It's the time of year, right, for graduation speeches. There was a graduation speech. There was a guy by the name of David McAuliffe Jr., who is a teacher, and he delivered a commencement speech, I believe, at a high school. But it wasn't a regular high school, it was a privileged high school, meaning it was a high school where, I guess, a bunch of rich white kids, right? It was a high school of with all the APs and all the opportunities and all the, you know, high-achieving private school. And the essential message of his speech, which went viral and earned him lots of TV interviews and newspaper features and national media, was, I think the title is, "You Are Not Special." I think that was his message. You know, because people tell kids how special they are and how smart they are. And in reality, you know, their talents and intelligence is usually not that far above average. You know, most of us are pretty close to the middle. There aren't that many people that are that special. And he says, okay, so those that are above average, those who graduate as valedictorians in high school, they are amongst thousands who graduate as valedictorians in high schools every single year. So even they are not all that special and unique. He said, our goal is not to accomplish, you know, some list of what we view as important or what we think will bring us the most glory. It's nice to have a purple dinosaur tell you when you're 2 years old that you're very special. But ultimately, one leaves their mark in this world by how successfully we find a passion and an avoda that fits our unique personality, where we can find the role that we can fill in this world that will contribute to the greater good of society. He had a cute way of saying it. He says, astrophysicists tell us that the universe has no center. Therefore, you cannot be that center. So the world is bigger than us. Korach's problem was that he couldn't grow comfortable in his role, and he wouldn't appreciate the value of having people who play a role. Remember when LeBron James won his first championship? It was so amazing, because I think it was the final game, one of the major final games, was one when LeBron passed up the last shot, and there was a guy named Mario Chalmers. He's a scrub. I mean, okay, he's a little better than a scrub, but not much, who was open for a three, and he knocked out an open three, because that's what you're supposed to do if you play in the NBA. But like, LeBron James doesn't win his first championship without Mario Chalmers. Now, Mario Chalmers is no LeBron James. And, you know, the fact that he ever won a championship with Miami calls into question the whole, you know, Tzadik Veralo, Rosh HaVetovo. But still, the Kohen isn't a Kohen if everybody's a Kohen. There need to be Levim, there need to be Yisraelim. The Little League trophy doesn't mean anything if everybody gets the Little League trophy. There has to be, it's great to have those who fill roles in a more public way and those who fill roles in a more understated and quiet way. And that's the only way society can function. And that's what Korach was missing. He didn't realize that he was very valuable as Mario Chalmers. He just wasn't very valuable as LeBron James. That was his job. Mesh Chachma, in Parshas Devarim, in Haftorah to Shabbos Chazon, writes that the message of Ketores is exactly that message. Ketores is a whole bunch of different spices. So the message is that even ingredients that are inherently bland and cheap, but when they work in concert with other ingredients, produce the most sublime and delicious of smells. A reach nichoach la'Hashem. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us, Eif shaliyola, and several mesechtas actually, Eif shaliyola b'lo bosim b'lo bursi. The world can't exist without tanners and without perfumers. Perfumers happen to smell good at the end of the day. Tanners happen to smell awful at the end of the day. But we need tanners also for society to function. If we're going to have leather to wear on our feet or whatever, to have belts, we need tanners also. So a father may have dreams of his son playing center field for the New York Yankees, or of having a catch with his kid, or teaching him Kala Tarakula, or of whatever his dreams are for his son. There have to be daughters also, and he's got to be okay with that, and the world can't function without that. Or a father may have a dream of having a little girl and whatever, but there have to be boys too, and he's got to be okay with that. The world needs Indians and the world needs chiefs. When Moshe wants to make his point to Korach, he chooses the Ketores to illustrate that point. Kol ha'am kulam kadoshim? You think that means we should all be the same? What would the Ketores be like with only a single spice? It wouldn't be good at all. What would music be like if there was only one note? It would be terrible. It would be like the way, it would be like listening to me sing. Moshe then calls for the ground to open up, because the land itself provides the same message. The nature of soil is such that not every soil in every location can grow the same produce. I remember I was with my family once in Florida, and the first thing you notice is the palm trees. I think one of my kids said, why don't they just plant them in New York? Because you can't. Wouldn't it be nice if we just had palm trees in New York? They would die. They wouldn't. They can't. They work in tropical regions. They don't work in New York. The soil can only produce certain things in certain parts. The earth itself understands that there are boundaries and there are roles, and that's how the world runs optimally. 250 brain aneurysms don't make that point. But the earth opening its mouth makes that point. There's another Gemara that relates to conversations that occurred between the sun and the moon. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Samach tells us, Rabbi Shimon Pazi Rami, he asked the following contradiction, God made two great luminaries in the heavens, Uksiv, but it also says, Esama'ora Gadol Vesama'ora Katan, that there was the great luminary and the Ma'ora Katan, the small luminary. So how do we reconcile those two? So says Gemara, we know the story, the moon came complaining to Hashem. Your kindergarten Mara didn't make this up. This is a Gemara. Ribono Shalala. Efshar the Shnei Melachim Sheyishamshu B'Keser Echad. Is it possible that you can have two kings with the same crown? Amrla L'chiyu Matias Atzmin. So Hashem says, you're right, you're fired. You're minimized. You're no longer the chief, you're now an Indian. You're no longer the quarterback, you're now an offensive lineman. Amr lefanav ribono shalola, hova marti lefanecha davar agun. Amit esatzvi. That's not fair. It was my idea. I was the one that was smart enough to realize that you can't have two kings. So I should be the king. Let the other guy, let the son be minimized. Zil likru tzadiki b'shimcha Yaakov akatan, Shmuel akatan, David akatan. The Gemara goes on to say that God said, "Don't worry, you're the ma'or hakaton." You know who else is going to be called a Katan? Yaakov, Shmuel, David. They're all going to be called Katan. The only other conversation in Agadic literature that involves the sun and the moon is when God teaches them this exact same lesson. You can't be front and center all the time. The moon, fulfilling its more limited role, is doing as important a job as he ever could. So being a katan is every bit as valuable to the tzibur as being a gadol. You know, what do we celebrate when, at a siyum hashas, for example? Not the accomplishments of a few gedolei Yisrael. It's that there are thousands of regular people who fulfill a multitude of roles in the Jewish community throughout the world and can make an impact on Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael doesn't need everybody to be a Rosh Yeshiva. So the sun and the moon see Korach making the same mistake that they made at the beginning of time. And the sun and the moon come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they say, if you don't stand up for Moshe Rabbeinu in this argument, we quit. Our whole essence, our whole avoda, our whole way of, our whole role was determined at the beginning of time based on this exact idea that there have to be leaders and there have to be followers, there have to be people who are in public positions and people in private positions. They can't stand to see this, so they argue to the Rabbon Shalom, if they are to continue functioning as they have until this point, God has to repeat the lesson that they learned at the beginning of time. Remember once, right before the summer, my chavrusa, who comes in, made aliyah a number of years ago, but he comes in for the summers, Rabbi Sholem Rasner, came to my house to raid all my svarim. And he doesn't like to shove all the svarim from Israel, so he typically comes sometime around now. I expect a phone call soon. When he comes in, he just, whatever svarim he needs for the summer, he'll just take from my house. And he remarked to me about how in Israel, his garbage man has a long white beard. And he said, he doesn't get, one of the things he misses, Erev Pesach, in the five towns, they arrange for special garbage pickup so you can get rid of all your chametz. They pick up all your garbage before the Sof Zman Biur so that you get rid of all your chametz. He says, they don't have that in Israel because the garbage man is also busy getting ready for Pesach and getting rid of his chametz. Which is an amazing thing. In America, we call ourselves patriots if you could cheer on a few freaks who can consume a copious amount of hot dogs in a very short period of time on the 4th of July. That's patriotic, Do we join the army? No, that's for the poor people. Do we fix highways? No, that's for the immigrants. In Israel, the country only runs as a Jewish country when everybody contributes in a way that they know how, when everybody does what they're equipped to do. And it's okay to be a great Jew and a garbage man, a great Jew and a street cleaner, because the country needs it. Everyone has a role. And that's the dream. Meaning the dream is not that, Mashiach comes, we all go to Eretz Yisrael, we're in a period of geula, and we're all doctors and lawyers. That's not the dream. Jewish mothers aside, that's not the dream. The dream is that there's an army that's run by us. There's a police force that's run by us. We're doing everything. And it's the only way society's going to work. There's not going to be other people to, meaning Klal Yisrael Be'eretz Yisrael means it's Am Yisrael. And we all have to do it. I'm reminded of a story. You'll indulge me for a few more minutes. This is a pretty good story. There's a rabbi named Rabbi David Cohn. There are several rabbis named Rabbi David Cohn. So one of the Rabbi David Cohns is a pretty young guy. Young by my standards, I guess. A couple of years older than me. He used to be a rabbi in the West Side. He's now going to be a rabbi in North Woodmere, I think, soon. He's moving to take over the Ashkenaz Minyan in our Torah in North Woodmere. Wonderful, wonderful guy. He's from West Hempstead originally. So shout out to West Hempstead boys. He was, when I first got married, he lived in the apartment above me with a few roommates. He wasn't married yet, even though he was a little older than me. And when he was 34, he was still single. And he was getting kind of frustrated, at the age of 34 to still be single. Ben Torah, he was an assistant rabbi in Fairlawn, New Jersey. He was a, for Rabbi Yudin, he was graduated Columbia Law School, super duper catch, right? he had a great resume. 34 years old, he was still single. So he was in Eretz Yisrael, he was at the Kotel on a fast day, and he hopped into a cab to go home after the fast was over, and the cab driver, was a Sephardic Jew, says, you look sad. Why do you look so sad? So I don't know what he was thinking, but he decided to open up to the cab driver, and he said, tell you the truth, I'm 34, I'm single, and I don't see any prospects. The cab driver said, shuts the meter, says, we're going to Kever Rashbi. Shuts the meter. We're going to the Kever Rashbi. So they go to Meron from the Kotel. You know, three and a half hours to Meron. True story. That's it. We got to go. Now, mind you, David Cohn is a Kohen. He can't even go into Kever Rashbi. So the cab driver, don't worry, I'll go. I'm Nadavin for you. But he slaps him along with the ride, doesn't charge him. And he goes in and he davens for him. And then he goes back and he goes back into the cab, you know, that's it. He dances with him, you know, at the Kever Rashbi or whatever, you know, outside there. A few other people who happen to be around, there's always people who are willing to dance over there. And then the very next day, someone mentions the shidduch to him. Normally he was so tired of dating that he wanted to be very careful in his checking and vetting of all the shidduchim because he just didn't want another bad date anymore. He just was in a mood and he just said yes without checking anything. 3 months later, he's engaged. But he didn't have the cab driver's name, phone number, or address because he just thought the guy was a lunatic. Right? He would never be able to express hakaras hatov, sadly. His kala got into a cab in Israel right after they got engaged. The cab driver says, you look so happy. Why are you so happy? She said, I got engaged. He says, Be'emet, mi achatan? So she says, oh, you wouldn't know him. His name is David Cohn from West Hempstead. He's like, really? So at the wedding was in Israel, and they had rabbis and doctors and lawyers and hedge fund managers and accountants and one Israeli cab driver celebrating with them at their chasna. You know, it's like one of those only in Israel kind of stories. But it happens because a Jewish person can be a cab driver too, you know? It's like, you know, it's unfortunate. Part of the, and I don't really mean to make this about professions, because unfortunately, the way that just the metzias in America is, if Jews don't go into high-paying professions, then we just can't make it, unfortunately, with tuition and everything else. But, you know, so I'm not giving career advice. You know, I don't want you to go home and say, when I graduate, I'm going to be an Uber driver, and like your parents be like, no, that is not okay. So don't make it about that. I'm talking about like roles within the Jewish people, that we should look for where there's a need and where our passions are and what we can contribute to the Jewish people. And I'm saying this because I come away, you know, yesterday I spent a day at a Yom Iyun for Tcheles in Baltimore, Maryland. And I'm so inspired by these people. There are essentially three guys. One of them is a dentist. One of them has like a PhD in like, I don't know, colors or something, and one of them, like, no, I'm not even sure, like, and like, regular people who seem like regular guys. None of them are professional rabbis, although I believe they all have smicha, but none of them are professional rabbis. They're, you know, they're just guys who were interested in tcheles. And what they probably, in my opinion, what they've done is they found a mitzvah, da'oraisa, that the Jewish people haven't been able to fulfill in thousands of years and brought it back to Klal Yisrael. And there are thousands of Jews doing a mitzvah da'oraisa that they never would have been able to do. Why? Because the Rashka Bahad, the Gadol Adar, did something? No, nothing to do with Gadol Adar. Regular guys. In fact, one of them told me that he went to a certain Gadol, who I'm not going to mention, when they first found it, and the Gadol said to him, it can't be. It can't be that you're going to find it. The Chafetz Chaim would have found it, not you. But I think that's so wrong. No, it can be. It could be that that was his role. And that's what he did for the Jewish people. We're not all going to have something of that scale. But we always have to have the confidence to know that we have what to contribute. We have what to bring to the Jewish people. And we're not just working off in our own little Dalet Amos, but we have what to contribute to the Jewish people, and we have to think in those terms and try to have ambitions in those terms to be able to contribute to the Jewish people.